Log Talk Radio.
Broadcasting to the world. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul. BlakeRadio.com.
Topically yours on the Blake Radio Network Rainbow Soul. And Happy New Year to everyone. I'm Deirdre Shuler, your host, wishing my listeners the best of 2014. Well, I know some of you made your New Year's resolutions, but me, I decided to just be the best I could be this year. And if I manage to do that, I think it's a good resolve. Well, I'm glad to bring in my first show of 2014 with the
Blue Jays. You know, I had Eddie LaVert on the show before, but since he's going to be appearing in my neighboring venue of Lehman Center for the Performing Arts on Saturday, January 11th, and that's going to be an 8 p.m. show, by the way, I decided to bring Eddie back so he can tell us the latest news concerning the OJs and also what's going to happen on his upcoming show. Now, if you want to attend the OJs show, I might as well tell you this in advance. You have to go down to the Lehman Center box office, or you can call 718-960-8833 or go online at www.lehmancenter.org. So you can get on board that love train and secure your seat before your fellow ticket buyers do. Well, I started off the show with For the Love You With, like Love Train, Backstabbers Used to Be My Gal, and Love Train. And there is something comforting about listening to these tunes and knowing they're around for whenever you feel like listening to feel-good tunes. And I think you're going to even feel better after I introduce Eddie LaVert and give him a chance to say hello. So, hello, Eddie. How are you?
Happy New Year to you. That was the very first time that I ever came on the radio like that, where, how did you know it was me?
I'm sorry, your voice is a little. What did you say?
I said, how did you know it was me? How did you know it was me on the phone so you could automatically go into your show like that?
Because I told your manager to have you call in at a certain time, so I knew it would be you. And you're my only guest.
Oh, but I mean, but somebody could have just accidentally called your number.
Pardon me?
I said someone could have accidentally just called your number, and you just started your show, and that's amazing to me. I'm sitting here with my mouth open. I've never been brought on that way, and that just blew my mind.
Well, you must have forgot, because I brought you on that way the last time you were on my show.
I didn't think it was the spontaneity of it, you know, that's what's amazing me, and I think that's really great. Everybody should start their show like that.
Well, that's what we want. We want our guests to feel comfortable and spontaneous and say what they really need. So I want to ask you, how was your Christmas? Did you have a nice Christmas?
I had a great Christmas. That wasn't a lot of we didn't have a lot of it wasn't as noisy or as busy as it has been, because everyone stays in different parts of the country, and with the weather being like it was, everyone decided that they were going to stay at home. A few people that were back east, they went out of the country, but all in all, me and my immediate family, Raquel, my daughter Ryan, my daughter Yuri, my daughter Sierra, we and some of my nephews and nieces came over, and we just had a little family thing where I got a chance to cook all the desserts. And I got a chance to cook to fry the turkeys. And I was at home, which was a great thing. And all together, I think it was wonderful.
You know, a lot of people don't fry the turkey yet. My mother tried that one time, and I know a lot of Spanish people do. Were you fried your turkey, too?
Yes, I fried two of them. You know, and this is my second year at doing it, and I like to think I'm getting better, but, you know, that when you go to injecting, you know, different the orange juice and different vegetable kind of stuff, injecting that into the turkey. And then, amazingly, this year my vegetable injection turned out to be a wonderful thing for a turkey. But my fruit thing, it was just... You know.
Well, do you have something traditional? A lot of people on Christmas have a traditional meal or something that they have every year. Do you?
We every year we make sure that we have at least my wife get a chance to cook her famous turkey and dressing. You know, the dressing is really critical for that time of year, and she also makes sure that she does her, like, cabbage greens. That's where if you have collard greens and cabbage greens mixed together, so you call them cabbage greens.
Oh, okay. I don't think I've ever had cabbage greens.
It's really good. It's really good. Really, really, really good.
Well, I can't leave out New Year's. How'd you spend your New Year's? Were you on the road or you were home?
No. This year we just happened to just spend our time out over the weekend. We were in, I think we went to Shreveport, Louisiana for, I think it was Friday, Saturday. We were in Oklahoma, and then Sunday we flew back home, and we were here for the for New Year's Eve in Iowa. You know, and that really was amazing, and we were so glad. I was really happy because I got a chance to spend time, and, you know, we just sat around and watched home movies because my wife put together a lot of the years that we traveled around with all of the kids, and, you know, we used to take home movies, so she finally got a chance to put it together so we could see it as one DVD, and it was really great. We really enjoyed that because, you know, watching and laughing and seeing my 11-year-old when she was a little baby, trying to play the piano, which was really funny, and seeing all the kids that are now grown, and are going to school and graduated college, and see them now at the age of, you know, 11 and 10, and you know, and how we were, you know, traveling around the country, getting them to experience the world. And, you know, and some of the time that they spent with, you know, some of the people that had passed on, you know, it was really a great DVD. You know, I really enjoyed that part.
That, you know, that is nice when you come together with your family and you can actually record it and look back at it for years to come.
Oh, yeah. It was just so great, you know, and some of those things you forget. And then you discharge your memory, and it puts you in a place where you're really thankful for the things that you have and the things that you have achieved. And then you finally realize how blessed you've really been. No matter, you know, we always want more, but when you take a chance to look at it and you see the things that you have around you and you're able to touch and feel them, you know, then you know how truly blessed you are.
Well, you know, you told me, and that's probably you don't remember, that your wife actually climbed a mountain. Was that a mountain in Africa?
Right, Mount Kilimanjaro. She
Which
climbed all the way to the top, Donna Richardson, who was the Donna Richardson joiner at that time, her and Donna and a couple of more friends and a cameraman, they climbed all the way to the top. And, you know, at the time, I didn't really realize that what an achievement that was, because there's so many people that have tried, so many famous people that have tried and didn't make it. And that was quite an achievement for them.
Oh, absolutely. Has she tried to climb since then?
Oh, she hasn't really, because she's been more, you know, my wife is really more of a stay-home mom, but, you know, she's really a cosmetologist, and she wants to have her own shop and all that. So she's going about that now, but she still finds time to be a part of her family. And I think that's really important. And I think that's what's been so important for me, that I've been able to keep my family close to me, whether they stay close or not. You know what I'm saying? That I would, as much as I could, I kept them as close to me as I could. After making mistakes, you know what I'm saying? If you understand what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, as you've matured in the business, you've done everything. So I guess at this juncture of your life, family becomes the most important thing. You just realize what's important to you outside of faith.
Well, it finally comes to you that you say, why don't I just, I've tried everything else. Why don't I try doing right for once in my life? You know what I'm saying? It's just that simple, you know. Yeah, you go to a place and say, well, you know, like you say, I've done everything and everything wrong. Why not try to do right for a while and see what happens? When I say wrong, I don't mean like killing people and robbing people and stepping on people, just making human mistakes. Human mistakes because of the fact that you don't have all the proper information, or human mistakes because it's so good to do, it seems like bad is a lot of fun. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, I do. I think it comes with maturity and experience.
Yes, I mean, absolutely.
You have something to look back on and ponder, and you see your mistakes.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you just wonder, would say, well, if I had took this path earlier in my life, if I would have taken this path like coming out of, once I got out of high school and I started on my career as far as a singer, if I could have just stayed straight and narrow or just concentrated on doing the right thing and staying in the right lane instead of venturing off and trying things. But, you know, I think that's part of life. You have to experience things to know the things not to mess with.
Right. I think that, you know, we live in a world of polarity, negative and positive, but both are teachers and both work together to hone the character of the soul, don't you think?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm in total agreement with you. You just got to know how long to stay in that situation. You can stay in those negative situations until they become detrimental to you. You have to also know, you know, that know when to hold them and know when to pull them and know when to run. You know,
that's a good gambler. Well, life is really a gamble, don't you think? Anyway, all gambling.
Absolutely, life is a gamble, and you know, and if you don't reach out and experience things. Like I say, you won't know the things that you should not mess with at all. You learn a lesson from, you know, put your hand in the fire, and it's going to get burnt, and you have to learn that. Like all babies and all young people have to learn certain things, you know, and so how to walk. It comes with learning how to walk and how to talk and how to get around in this world.
Well, you started, Jay's, almost as a, was it a teenager? Or when did you start the
ocean? I was a teenager. You know, me and Mr. Walt and Mr. Williams, Bobby Massey, Bill Isles, William Powell, we started this during the semester exams in high school. You know, where you have those semester exams where you have to, you go to school a half a day and you take exams and then you're out of school for the rest of the day. We just mingling around and messing around started singing together. And from there we went into rehearsals and from there came to this. But it's been such a ride. You know what I'm saying? Because, you know, you start off five guys, and then you end up three, and then you lose one to tragedy, which is, you know, which I call, you know, it's part of life, death is. You lose one to that, and then it's just two, and then you are replacing it with other guys, people you basically don't know, but you learn how to know and love, like a Mr. Sammy Strain, a Mr. Eric Grant, like a Mr. Nate Best. All of these people come into your life through tragedy and through people to the five guys that really started out, you know, it ends up being two guys. And
both
then
of us, Walter Williams is still with you from the very beginning. He and you are the original members, right?
Yes. And see,
he looks like his brother.
With Thomas, it's more like being married. Some days you think about divorce. And then you say, "Up, oh, it's cheaper to keep her."
Well, that's true. Like in any marriage, you have to compromise.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, you it's a commitment, and you try, the older you get in life, the less patient you become. But you got to also look at this. This is a business, and it's really a corporation. And I happen to be half owner of it, and he's the other half owner of it. Now, how do we do? Do we sacrifice all of that hard work that we did and just let the corporation crumble? Or do we continue to work and try to make it something special? I vote for the latter, to continue to work and make it something special.
Well, now your latest, and he's not exactly the latest, because he's the last member who's still with you, Eric Nolan Grant. He's going to be by next year. Won't it be next year that he'll be with you 20 years?
Yes. He's been, well, you know, everybody that's been in the group, except for Mr. Nate Best, stayed for quite a while. You know, Mrs. Sammy Strain, I think I like to call it when Sammy Strain was a part of myself, Mr. Williams, and Sammy Strain. Well, I think we were at our, we were total superstars. During that period, total superstars. We were breaking records for different venues and selling out all over the place. And we had and our show was high energy, you know. And as Eric came in, and that was because Sammy didn't no longer want to do it, and he later turned his life around and became more into God. He didn't want to do it anymore. And then we got in. Then along came Eric, and you know we've been able to sustain what we created, and through effort of us, you know, learning, being seasoned entertainers is really, I think, is the core of it. You know. Charlie Atkins used to always tell us, it's always great to have a hit record. It's great to be number one on the charts. But it's even greater to have a hit act because you'll last much longer.
Oh, absolutely. Now, if you don't mind, I want to play one of your tunes for the listeners, the Backstabbers.
Mm-hmm. Yes. My favorite. That's my favorite song.
And that song was written actually by Leanne Hoff and Gene McFadden and John Whitehead?
Well, you say that, but it was really John and Gene who wrote it. You know, that's how it was first presented to us, along with maybe Victor Kostoffian. You know, that's how I first heard it.
Okay, well, you would know. So here we go with the Backstabbers.
Thank you.
Well, that was the Backstabbers, folks. And that was one of your major hits.
Yeah, that was and that was live. That was not the record version. That was a live performance. Because all those little nuances that was in there, like sing the song and all that, that stuff that I do when we're doing live performances. So no, that was a live performance. I don't know where did you get that at?
Amazon.
Wow! They sell everything.
Oh yeah, they have several different versions of it. It doesn't matter.
They sell everything. You know, it's amazing how, you know, when you hear certain things and how. Well, it's amazing to me because I'm always totally surprised to hear what's being played and what sometimes an interviewer will play for me or somebody that will play over the radio a version of the song that we've been doing for forever, and then it turns out to be a different version than the record. And I think that's really, it's really sneaky of them. I don't know how they do it.
Well, that's how I did it. I looked on Amazon and they had so many versions. I picked that one.
Yeah, well, that was good. That's a live version, and that's a live version with strings and horns.
There you go.
Yeah,
so I know
that's really good.
You are both a songwriter, right?
Yes, I am. I do a lot of writing. I like to say that's how we actually got in business. I wrote a song way back called "Lonely Drifter," and that was like one of our first top 40 records, which was done with H. B. Barnum, and that. Writing is just something that I do because and looking at the world around me, you know, and the things that go on around, the things that go on with my friends and myself gives you a lot of food for thought and a lot of things to write about. You know, it's like now I'm in the process of trying to write some new music and I'm just writing about the things that's going on around me, and it's going to be very interesting because I'm divorced, and I never did getting divorced, I never realized the selfishness that goes on with that. You know what I'm saying? How people, you know. Well, they fall out of love and out of communication. They fall out of communication with each other, and they'll say, well, because the wife now wants to spend more time with the children, she don't have enough time for him. He's now, you know, he has to now make more. He has to now make more effort to get her in a position so she have more time for him. But instead of thinking that way, we have a tendency to reach out for something else that is not good for the relationship, and it creates problems, and we end up in a place where we want to get divorced, but it all started out because it was selfishness. Selfish on his part. But now he wanted more time for her, but she needed more time for the children. And she didn't want to compromise herself to try to find more time for him and that time for her children. So it all becomes selfish. And we always end up in those negative places because of things.
Does it boil down to ego and the desire? In the end, it's all about fighting over possessions, isn't it?
Yeah, well, you know, possession of time, possession of, you know, of things. Well, it only comes down to possession of things after the hostility has begun, where you have the possession of not enough time for me, and now not enough time for him, and now you're not the same person that we once knew. Well, we can't get undressed in the living room anymore because the kids are here. You know what I'm saying?
Well, sometimes it's just that people grow away from each other. They change and they grow. I don't know if it's written that people have to stay together forever.
I think that's just a great excuse. You know, I've grown away from you. Look, this was what the person you married is this person. Now, as they become, as you spend time with them and they show you other sides of them, it's about whether you really love that person and can make the adjustment and say, well, I have to make the adjustment because I love this person and I'm married and I'm committed to it. You know, commitment, that is our biggest problem. Committing, you know, and I mean committing is not just for today. Committing is tomorrow and the changes that will come in your life. Committing, then I will be able to try to make the adjustments to adjust to your to the commitment that we made and your to, so I can make the adjustment to your changes. Committed to the point that I will try to make that change.
Exactly. It's responsibility and commitment. I agree with you there that at some point people don't want to take the responsibility to commit.
Yeah, see, that's the big cruncher there, commitment. You know, it's like with anything, your career, anything you want to do, you got to be committed to it and committed to put in the work, committed to put in the time, committed to be adjustable and committed to taking the criticism. And then trying to adjust to it.
Well, that's the thing about being an entertainer. So much of your life is on the road. Did you expect that when you first started off, that so much of your life would be traveling? And it's fun, I guess, at first, but after years of it, does it just become too much? Or
well, you still have to get old as me, and then you finally realize the things that you missed. You know what I'm saying? I really missed, and I'm just finally realizing the things that I missed. I missed growing up in the house with my boys, Drew and Sean. I missed being there with them every day. I missed being there when he took the girl to the prom and the car didn't work. I missed being there watching them eat like horses and trying
being
to sell them out to you know,
being
I miss being that part. That's what I miss. I miss, you know, just little things. It's just little things that I miss. The little things that make them men, the little things that made them the person, those little habits that they had, those little things that, you know, that only your father and only someone who's watching you and knows the correct way to do that and able to tell you that and help to direct you to a better way of doing something and not being, keeping you from being a slob to being a gentleman.
So that's the truth. But you tried to give back, I must say. Tell me about the OJ Scholarship Fund.
That's one way of trying to give back. You know, because I really feel that education is really the key to it. You know, education and learning. And on no matter what angle it comes from, if it comes from the street, as long as it's something positive and it elevates your thought. The OJ Scholarship now, this is our eighth year, and we've probably raised about maybe $2.5 million And we've had some great assistance from people like Magic Johnson, Frankie Beverly and Maze, The Whispers, Johnny Gill, Eric Benet, Stevie Wonder, Mike Epps. We've had a lot of people, a lot of great entertainers, Ronnie Isley. A lot of our friends have come along and donated their time and their effort to help us to raise this money. And also Southwest Airlines, Chrysler, McDonald's, a gang of Nike. A lot of people have helped us to get here. And this last one that we held in Las Vegas was really a great, it was a great effort, you know, but, you know, it was a wonderful affair. But the thing that is that, you know, trying to get people here from other parts of the country was the hardest part in trying to make this a success. But it was a success from the standpoint that we were able to get all our friends here, and we had a wonderful time. We had a wonderful time, and we raised maybe about $60,000 or $70,000.
Nice. Well, tell me about your golf swing. You also do.
You mean the only golf swing that's worse than mine is Mr. Charles Barkley. You know, so you know, I'm running a close second to his.
Oh, okay. Is he good or is he bad?
No, he's terrible. He's got to be the last person you want to copy his swing. And I'm probably just one step above him.
Oh my goodness.
So,
but at least
your
efforts pay off because you joined the tournament to assist youth with their education. What is that, to help them buy books or pay their tuition? Or?
Well, this is to help pay their tuition. And then we always give one scholarship away for an adult who's trying to reinvent their lives and going back to school and getting their degree. So we always include one of them. And then they got to have their academic scores got to be really good, and they also got to be good citizens. And, every year we give out 5 scholarships to kids from Stark County in Ohio, which is mandatory because that's where the Scholarship Foundation is located. But this year we gave 2 here in Las Vegas because we were here doing, you know, we had our scholarship weekend here in Las Vegas. So, and we got a chance to stretch out and meet more people and try to do, and we're going to try to do it larger each time. And we've had great help, like I say, from Centric, from people at BET, you know what I'm saying, from, you know, different people that have just came and donated monies and stuff. The hardest thing is to get somebody to do something for free. But we've been able to get great help. And I want to thank the UAW and the people at Chrysler and the people at Southwest for being there for the OJ Scholarship Foundation.
Well, I also want to just go back to a second where you mentioned that you were working on songs. Can we expect a CD this year or next year?
Yeah, I'm hoping. That's why I'm bearing down and digging real deep, trying to make it happen.
Do you ever contribute some of the profit from a hit CD towards these charities that you're involved in?
Yeah, always, because they're always in my pocket. What are you talking about? Look, you. First of all, if you're passionate about something, if you can't contribute to what you believe, then who will?
Exactly. Well, I was wondering, since you're writing so many, if we're going to hear any at Lehman Center on January 11th, any of your new tunes.
Well, you know, there's always a possibility you might hear something. All depends on how fast I can get with the band and get them prepared for it, you know.
Well, you don't have a lot of time. It's going to be
no,
out of
the I don't. You're. Thanks a lot.
Well, are you on tour at the moment, or are you home in Las Vegas? It sounds more like you're relaxed.
I'm at home. I'm at home in Las Vegas now. Where I'm relaxing at least until Monday, and then I'll probably start getting all hyped up for the Lehman Center, because that's a pretty big gig, you know, and you want to be at the top of your game. Because you're playing New York, and New York is one of my favorite places. And if you can make a name in New York, then you can make a name anywhere in the world.
Oh, that's for sure. When you come to New York, do you stay a couple of days, or are you back home?
Usually we stay out in Battery Park over there, and I get a chance to watch them build the new facility over there. Where the towers were, you know, and so usually we're over there, but usually I'm there at least for a couple of days, and I'm pretty sure that I'll be there this time because I probably have to leave a day before because of the weather is so unpredictable. So you don't know, you don't want to get caught up and don't want to make it.
Well, last night it snowed in New York.
That's what I'm saying. It didn't in the desert.
I'm gonna.
If the gig is on the 11th, I gotta leave on the 10th.
Oh, so you? Do you fly in, or you? Yeah, I guess you fly.
Yeah, I fly in. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm gonna take another little moment and give the people what they want, and that's the name of the next song that I'm gonna play by the OJs. Give the people what they want.
The world.
What do you do after Lehman? Did you have a mini tour planned?
Back to writing. We're currently working on a tour for the summer with Miss Gladys Knight. That we're trying to put that together now, and we're in the process of negotiating. So I'm hoping that can happen because she's always such a joy to work with. And you know,
appeared with her not so long ago.
Uh huh.
Did you do a show with her not so long ago?
Yeah, we did. We did last summer, but we didn't do but so what maybe about 10-15 dates. And so we felt like after we finished doing those 10 or 15 dates, we felt like this was something we could continue. So we're trying to work on doing it this summer also. You know, so because there was a lot of places we didn't get to go to.
Well, this should be a lovely show.
Yeah. She's a joy to work with. You know, and I mean, you know, she's one of those, those people when you say bring it, she brings it every night, and that's a wonderful thing.
That is. It's difficult to do, but I guess she's honed her craft so well.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what happens with when you find pros like herself, you know, they're bringing it every night, and that's what we're trained to do. Like even there's no crying in baseball, there's no crying in entertainment, because you know either you if you know your craft, then you know a way to make it work for you.
Absolutely. Well, I want to remind the listeners that this is the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul, and I'm Deirdre Shuler, your host, and we're talking to Eddie LaVert of the OJs. He's going to be appearing at Lehman Center for the Performing Arts, which is located at 250 Bedford Park Boulevard West in the Bronx, and he and the OJs are going to be appearing on Saturday, January 11th at 8 p.m., so go get your tickets at the Lehman Center box office or call for them at 718-960-8833. And you can also go online at www.lehmancenter.org. And we're having a lovely chat with Eddie. And Eddie, I wanted to mention that you've had several awards. And weren't you awarded the BET Lifetime Achievement Award?
Yes.
But most recently, weren't you inducted in the Music Hall of Fame in August of 2013?
Yeah, that was something that they just started in Cleveland, R&B Music Hall of Fame. We've been very, very, very fortunate to be around to receive these things and to physically have them put in your hand. And you wish for this, and you say, I want to be successful. And then when you get the success, you know, a lot of us have a tendency to want to say, well, you know, want to be, I need to be just a little bit more private. I don't want to, you know, but without people wanting to know who you are and wanting to feel who you are, and, you know, that's what you got in this game for. That's what your ultimate goal is, for people to know who you are. And that, to me, is one of the ultimate goal, is to for your fans, for the people who listen to your music, to know who you really are.
You mean as a human being outside of being
as a human being? Yes, absolutely, absolutely. As a human person, and that you really think, and that you really have, you know, honor and integrity, and you really have important things on your mind, that you care about what happens in the world and what happens to your neighbor and what happens to the children and what happens to when you see the little dogs and the cats that's being abused. And see, when you see the kids that are being hungry, and you see these kids who don't think they have much, but they have everything, and don't realize it.
Oh, absolutely. And it's sad that we're in a world or a country of such prosperity, and there's so many people in need here. You're actually coming into New York this year, starting off the year with you, as our new mayor.
Yes, Bill de Blasio. Do you know anything about Bill de Blasio? No, I don't. His
policy, it seems, will be completely different from the former Mayor Bloomberg, who was a very wealthy person. And this de Blasio has at least promised, we'll see, to be more of a people person and reach out to the average citizen, which is, you know, sometimes they get forgotten when you have wealth everywhere and wealth
that's
catered.
Right.
So we're hoping that
right.
mayor will be the mayor of the people. We shall see. As they say, by your deeds, like known.
No, I don't know him. You know, I haven't even been up on his policies.
Well, I can understand that because you live in Vegas, in Las Vegas.
Yes.
Do you do a lot of shows there? Because that
at least maybe about two or three a year.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, where do you usually appear?
Usually appear at the Cannery. We play the Cannery on the south side, and the Cannery on the east, and then sometimes we play up on the Strip. We'll play the MGM, or either we'll play the Bellagio or Mandalay Bay. So it varies. You know, we don't have a stationary place that we play on a regular. The Boys and Men now, they got a home over there at the Mirage. You know, but I don't know whether I want to. I'd rather come to Las Vegas and just call it home instead of coming here to work on a regular.
And especially since you've been working all over the country and the world, do you plan to go out of the country this year?
Yeah, we're probably on our way to South Africa because I know we got a private party to do sometime in a couple of months. We got to go over there for a private party. They're giving one of the dignitaries over there. I really wanted to go over for Mr. Mandela's for his going home dedication over there for his ceremonies. I really wanted to go because me and my son Gerald, before he passed away, I had a chance to sit with him for a couple of hours over at his compound over there in Johannesburg. And he was such a kind-hearted man, such a very easy person to talk to. And I really wanted to go and pay my respects. But, you know, it became so hectic, so many people over just to be able to get in and out of the country and to get a room was a chore. So I just decided I wasn't going to get mixed up in that. But he was a great person. And, you know, now that I think about of the three people in that room over there at that meeting with him that me and my son had with him for a couple of hours, there's only one of us still alive, and that's me. So, because my son is gone, and now he's gone, and I'm still around.
Can carry the torch.
Yeah.
And it's that you are, because there's always somebody that, especially if that's a privilege to have been in the room with him for 5 hours to tap his mind and know what he stood for.
And oh, yeah.
Share that
yeah,
with a lot of people.
You know what he reminded me of? He reminded me of an uncle. You know, one of my uncles that I go and spend time with, and we talk about everything and a lot of things. And, you know, he was quite a man. He was quite a man, quite a man. You know, we were so in awe talking to him that, you know, you didn't want to seem like you were prying and doing an interview. You wanted it to be in a conversation, you know what I'm saying? Hello? Hello? Hello?
Was he satisfied with the status of South Africa?
He was satisfied with the way it was going. He was satisfied with that. He thought that was a positive, that was a really positive way, and they were at a great time. But, you know, like with all things, dissension from within is always a threat.
Yes. Unfortunately. Well,
yeah. And trouble always starts that way. It always starts from within. And then, you know, if you can't sort it out, it has a way to work its way out and become everybody's business.
It depends on the hearts of men.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and he was one of those kind of people that was able to, you know, to keep somewhat of a muffler on it. You know what I'm saying? Now with him gone, I don't know who will be able to keep that muffler on it.
I guess we'll see.
Yeah, we will see.
Did you meet Winnie at all?
I beg your pardon?
Did you meet Winnie Mandela at all?
Oh, yes. I've had dinner with her and, you know, a lot of her people. My relationship with South Africa has been one of none approval. When I went there, it was not because it was approved by the government over there, but I went there to learn what was going on my own. And I learned, you know, that their biggest problem was, like I say, the fight from within. You know what I'm saying? We all must get on the same page. And it's always been the same thing over there in South Africa. And, you know, with Winnie and him, they came to a place where they were not seeing eye to eye. And once again, that became very personable. You understand with he and Winnie. And it just like I say, we will see who will be able to put a muffler on it and to see it come to another place at a higher level.
And that's all we can hope for, that somebody will step up to the plate and be the next Mandela for himself.
Absolutely.
Really. But
absolutely.
Now I'm going to ask you one more question. Well, obviously the OJs have earned their legend status, climbed in many mountains, as I've said before. And what do you do, or what is important to you outside the music and your family? Do you have any particular hobbies that you like to do or whatever?
My hobby is pretty well, my music. That's when I'm not doing anything else, I'm writing music. I'm into trying to create something new and trying to go to another level with my music. And the thing that interests me most is that, we as a people, if we could just get over our little petty differences, if we could just get to the place where we could all realize that, we got all these churches and everybody goes to pray, and there's a lot of people that go to church every day, and they're all praying for a better world, a better life, better health, safety, and caring for our neighbor. But I see there's so many different names. You got Methodists, Protestants, Catholics, Buddhists, Muslims, what I'm saying? But
mm-hmm.
aren't we all praying to the same God? Don't we all want the same thing? Then why is it so segregated if we want the same thing? How can that be that we got so many different churches and so many, only certain people go to this and certain people go to that, when we all want the same thing? We all are praying to God, and isn't that the God of all? That's the only thing that puzzles me.
Well, I think it's high time that we've advanced technology-wise, but as a species, we remain the same. We're still arrogant, stubborn, ignorant, warlike, and at some point we need to grow up.
We're closed mind. And key word,
limited.
What you just said there, Dee, is that some at what time, somewhere, we need to grow up and get over it. These are the things that we need to work out together, and this is the only way the world is going to become a better place, if we work it out together.
The world of the many. So we should all share in its bounty, and we should take care of our earth so that we can continue in health and prosperity. Because right now we're polluting everything we touch. We've become ridiculous.
Absolutely. It's just crazy. And we're not, and then, we want to worry about, we have to keep, we cannot keep settling for mediocrity. And we keep settling for that, and we keep giving these kids false hope. You've got to work for it. You can't just be mediocre and it's going to happen for you. We got to stop settling for that. And that once we started doing that, that's when we started downhill.
On that note, I think we'll pray for better people and take action, because praying is great, but you have to take action and make those things you pray for.
Absolutely.
Happen.
You know, prayer without works is no good.
Exactly.
What good is it praying and don't do anything to help it?
There you go. We can't wait for God to do it, because God is in us. God
That's
gave us
right.
the power.
There you go. There you go. And if we don't take the action, then, it's shame on us. That's where it's at. We need to put it in motion.
We do, and I want to thank you for being my guest today, and coming on and letting the listeners know about what's going on with you, and that you'll be in New York to kick off the Lehman Center's 2014 33rd season.
And I'll
really
be looking forward to seeing them in that place. You make sure you guys get your tickets. I'm on my way.
All right, so once again, folks, call the box office, 718-960-8833, or go online at www.leanincenter.org. And we thank Mr. LaVert, Eddie LaVert, for coming on and being our guest today. It's been a pleasure talking to you, sir.
Yeah, my pleasure talking to you, Dee. You have a great and a very prosperous new year. And, you know,
thank
call
you.
Me sometime.
Well, actually, the reason I knew that you were on the phone, I can say it now, is because your number, I'll just write it down.
Dee, you didn't tell me everything.
So usually I don't take the people's number because it's not my right to do that, but if you say call you sometime, I will take your number.
Do that.
That's
okay. Do that. Call me sometimes, Dee. You take care of yourself, all right?
I will. And this is the Blake Radio Network Rainbow Soul, and I'm Deirdre Schuller, thanking my listeners for making my topic topically yours. And you know what? We're going to end the show with, well, this is how everybody feels, but I don't always feel this way, for the love of money. Let's say for the love of money, via the love of
yeah,
money.
Yeah, but that's how everybody feels.
And this is the world, so we're going to end with the world, for the
okay,
love of money.
been listening to the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul. Good night.